And with me, as always, is my co-host, Lorna.
Hello!
Episode 56 of our podcast.
I don't know, something to like be that. Honest.
Today, if you've never listened before, we do reports on hidden moments from history, or we report on famous moments, give you a bit of information that you may not know about, and that's sort of the approach we got today, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because today we're focusing on photography.
Ooh.
Thanks, that sounded intrigued. Oh, yeah. I don't know why I came across this, but I did. And I just thought some photos have interesting stories behind them. So I chose one from history. And
I think you're more likely to get a photo with an interesting story behind it than not.
You think? Of I all think the photos so. That are taken? Ever?
Actually.
Famous photos, at least.
I think it's a personal story. Because I was actually going through my photos this morning trying to delete some because I've got no memory. And some are like, oh, I remember that. That was nice. Oh, that happened on that day. But I guess it's only personal.
So, are you doing a report on one of your stories?
Mm-hmm.
This
yes.
was the time I went to the park.
Yeah, I could do. Could change it all around last minute and pick a random picture.
I don't think people would want to listen to that too much.
Oh, thanks, Matt.
No, I don't just mean your story. I mean, like, if any of us chose photos, I think people would prefer us to talk about photos they can search online.
That's what we'll do then.
That's what we'll do instead. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Let me just change my podcast report. 1 minute. So, I am reporting on a photo of a very famous person this week. I have just got a little bit of background on photography, though.
Oh, I love that. Go on.
Not really. Oh. When I say a little bit, I mean minuscule.
Better than nothing. Go
tiny.
For it.
I'm trying to think of other words.
Small.
I said small, didn't I?
Little. Poquito.
Okay.
Petite.
Yeah. So, war. That's a good first word, isn't it?
No, I don't know what you're on about.
Well, war is a huge part of the history of photography. A lot of the famous photos we find are war photos.
Or I think they're used as a tool in war.
Yeah. Propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Until the 1820s, we found other ways of documentation, whether that was written, whether that was verbal. But the invention of photography changed everything, and it became one of the most important and powerful tools we have today at our disposal. One of the first big moments in the history of photography was the American Civil War. And because for the first time, the true tragedies of war could be relayed to the people with images. Because if you hear about it, if they say, like, oh, hundreds have died, you'd be like, oh, not good. Doesn't sound good. But then when you actually see, you know, images of...
It's harrowing.
...of people, it adds another layer of harrow.
Mm.
That's not a word, is it?
No.
Another harrowing layer. It's one thing to hear about, but seeing it can be much more powerful. And we come across photographs on a daily basis. In fact, we come across some photographs so often that they become recognised as famous. Even if we don't know what they're about or the story behind them.
I think that's the thing, like a lot of famous pictures, you don't know the story, you just know they're famous. And it's like the, do you mention at the Times top 100 most influential pictures?
No.
Oh, I think if you went down that list, so they've compiled a list and it's like the most influential pictures in the world and like in history. So I think if you went down that list, you'd know a lot of the pictures, but you wouldn't know anything about them.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're not driving and you're obviously listening to this on a phone or a laptop, you have a little Google search or ask Jeeves or Bing. We're not.
Does Jeeves still exist?
I don't think so.
No.
Yahoo.
Yeah, Bing. Bing's the best one.
Is it?
Except from Google, obviously. Okay. I'd say Bing's number
I'd say two. Google a just Google famous photos or world's most famous photos on images. And you'll come across probably the two photographs we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But you might not know the story behind it. So, my photo is of an Argentinian man.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Che
Guevara.
Ernesto Che Guevara.
Yep.
Full name. We actually did a podcast on Fidel Castro a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
They're intrinsically linked, the two of them.
Mm-hmm. I'm fairly sure most people will have heard of Che Guevara.
No, yeah, I know.
Except for maybe my sister.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't know who he is. That happens a lot, though.
No. Like, the other day, Lorna went to a fancy dress party as Frida Kahlo, the painter at Mexico.
Yep.
And I asked my mum... Oh, I said, I don't know why I'm telling this story on the podcast. I told him that Lorna was going as Frida Kahlo, and she said, "Who's Mida Garbo?" And I said, "Nope, wrong. No, that's not a word."
To be fair, nobody seemed to know. Mm. Like, even people at the party were
I thought two people went as Frida Kahlo.
Yeah, me and somebody else, but even people there were like, "Who are you supposed to be?" Oh. And I was like, "Frida Kahlo," and they were like, "Who's that?"
Oh, okay.
To be fair, this person is studying to be a vet, so obviously not interested in art.
No. Well, they could be. Might go home and they
well,
might.
Well, she wasn't because she didn't know
Frida was.
She
might have painted those dogs playing poker.
So. I don't know of any paintings of dogs
what?
Playing
you
poker.
What? You don't know dogs playing poker? Come on, we're on the history of photography here, though. You need to let like, you know what you're talking about. Oh, that's not even photos, that's painting. The dogs playing poker.
I'm going to Google it later.
Wow, it's everywhere.
Off pod, I will find out and educate myself on dogs playing poker.
I'm pretty sure it's poker. So anyway, Che Guevara was... Oh, what I was going to say was the episode with Fidel Castro a couple of weeks ago was about the assassination attempts on Fidel mm-hmm. Castro's life. Over 600... About 638, apparently. And
loads.
Retell some of the strangest ones. But today we talk about Che. And he obviously became most famous for joining the revolutionary forces in Cuba, led by the aforementioned Fidel Castro. And he helped to overthrow the government there, led by Batista, I think. He became intrinsically linked to Cuba and has been ever since, even though...
He's massive over there.
He is, yeah. Even though he...
have been.
Okay, always been. Even though he has fascinating moments elsewhere, which is a topic for another day. His last few years of life are quite mm-hmm. interesting.
Where did he go to?
Went to Bolivia yeah, and took part in the fight for independence there.
Yeah,
and
that's he was all about independence.
That's where he perished. Yeah, I find that quite interesting tough. Because he... I find him more interesting because he got Cuba into... He got Castro into power. Helped the revolutionary forces there. And then he worked in government for, I think, like 8-9 years or something.
And then he was like,
this is not for me. And he didn't like money or anything. That's why he started signing, because he was in charge of the bank or the mint or whatever.
Which seems silly if you ask me.
And then he didn't really care for money, so he just signed it Che and was like, use it, whatever you want. And it come back to money later on, actually.
Okay.
There was a Cuban man at around the same time called Alberto Diaz Gutierrez, also known as Alberto Corda.
Mm-hmm.
He was a former fashion photographer.
Ooh.
Do you know anything about this story?
I have heard this story before.
Do you know what photo of Che I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
There's actually a couple. There's another... We'll get on to what this one is, but there's one of him with like a big cigar. Which is really famous as well. That was taken by someone else.
This is the one in the beret, right?
This is the one in the beret. Before the revolution, Alberto and his friend named their studio Corda after two Hungarian film directors.
Mm.
And they then took the name of their idols, of these film directors, and that's how it became Alberto Corda. Which is a bit weird, isn't it?
What, so... Who did he make?
So
his friend had the surname of Corda then?
Well, yeah, afterwards, I assume so. They both named their studio Corda after some Hungarian film actress and then was like, actually, we'll take the name Corda as well.
Hmm. But, like, I guess it must just be there because, like, Che took the name Che. It's not his name.
Yeah, I know, but this is surname.
Oh.
Che just means, like, friend nickname. Something in some language. But yeah, it's weird. It's like you call yourself Lorna Spielberg. Just being like, favourite director.
He's not my favourite, so really? I wouldn't.
Who's favourite director?
I don't know, but it's not him.
Okay. Lana roasting Spielberg live on it.
Apparently, at my camp, where I went did Camp America,
okay,
we'd go into like the local town, which is like East Hampton in Long Island, which is quite a...
Very fancy.
A fancy place, and we used to like try and spot celebrities. I didn't see anyone, but apparently some people from Camp 1 saw Steven Spielberg.
Ah.
And Taylor Swift.
Good link. Together?
No.
Ah.
But oh, there's a film coming.
That would be weird. So yeah, they took the name of their idols mm-hmm. and made the most of Cuba's natural light to commercialise clothes and promote TV styles. So that's what they were doing in the photography, taking yeah. pictures of celebrities, basically. 1959's revolution turned this on its head, really. It turned them into graphic reporters committed to a cause. So basically, these when the rebels took over, they became the only employee for any private business. So,
right, okay.
because all the businesses were being forced to nationalise, so
right.
they had to sort of begin working for the government, essentially. March, that was just a bit of background on him.
Mm-hmm.
March 4th, 1960, a French freight ship, I almost said freight train,
mm-hmm.
Called Le Cubre, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, was transporting weapons from Belgium to Cuba to equip Castro and his regime. In Havana Harbour, the boat exploded, killing over 100 people and injuring lots more. Castro blamed America for this. So basically, a funeral was held in Cuba for this.
For all the people.
For all the people who died. And Corda was assigned by the newspaper Revolution, good name for a newspaper,
mm-hmm.
to cover the funerals. While the speeches commenced, Alberto Corda photographed Che Guevara twice. He was in attendance.
Yeah.
One horizontal and one vertical camera, I'm assuming, portrait and landscape.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if Che was actually staring at someone speaking, because there was lots of speeches, or if he was just staring off into the distance. I didn't find that
it's
out.
It's an emotional time anyway. Yeah. Funeral, isn't it?
But he didn't notice the photo being taken. Apparently he just sort of stepped out from behind people for like a minute and then stepped back away and like you couldn't see him.
Oh, so it was the only opportunity yeah, to get
to take a photo of him. Corda would later say, at the foot of the foot of a podium decorated in mourning, I had my eye to the viewfinder on my old Leica camera. I was focusing on Fidel and the people around him. Suddenly, through the 90mm lens, Che emerged above me. I was surprised by his gaze. By sheer reflex, I shot twice, horizontal and vertical. I didn't have time to take a third photo as Che stepped back discreetly into the second row. It all happened in half a minute. So, pretty like... It's strange, I think, that some of these most famous photos in the world can just be like... A split second. Obviously, a photo is a split second, but
yeah, but I think that's it.
If he'd just been watching someone else in that moment, he wouldn't have taken that photo.
But I think that's what makes it such a big photo as well, is that it's unlikely anybody else will have ever captured that picture, and then like people will have seen him on that day or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
He actually cropped the photo because in the full vertical portrait. Oh no. He cropped the horizontal shot into a vertical portrait
mm-hmm.
Because in the full image, another man is just in frame in front of Che, and he also has palm trees over his left shoulder, which you can see.
Would make it a totally different picture.
Yeah, if you look at the picture, it looks a bit weird seeing this like famous image, but with these like palm trees and yeah. like the face of a guy just in front. It's a bit weird. The photo was actually rejected at the time by the newspaper.
Why?
Choosing not to publish it was in black and white. They just decided to go for some photos of I think the people speaking instead of this picture of Che.
Nonsense.
Regrets. If you don't know this photo, by the way, just search Che Guevara and we'll
tweet it.
You'll find it everywhere.
We will tweet it as well.
He's wearing a beret, he's got a bit of a beard mm-hmm. and
he's looking moody.
Into the distance. Instead, Alberto Corda decided to decorate his studio. I also read that he decorated his house with it, but I'm not sure which is true. But I think at least he's definitely his studio. He either put it up in his studio or he either put it up in his house.
Multiple times?
No, just right, like the copy that he had. And he called it, I'm going to struggle with this word. Guerrero Hiroko. Hiroko.
Hiroko.
Thank you. I was focusing more on Guerrero. I was thinking gorilla. Guerrero.
Guerrero, yeah.
Yeah. Hiroko. Anyway, and he described the Shane, the photo, who as a human who was annoyed. It says something else, but I changed the word. And in pain. With impressive force in his expression, given the anger concentrated in his gaze after so many deaths. So obviously he thinks the face was obviously caused by the place where he was at, these funerals. In 1967, just a few months before Shay would die in Bolivia, so this is like 7 years later, 8 years later, an Italian businessman named
Giangiacomo.
Thank you. Giangiacomo Feltrinelli. I nailed that. I'm going to say Feltrinelli for the future. Appeared at Corda's door in Havana, obviously in Cuba. Feltrinelli had been in Bolivia and had brought with him a letter from the president of a think tank over in Bolivia, hoping, this isn't really that relevant, but he was hoping to export the ideology of the Cuban Revolution. So there's this think tank, his president, apparently he's a big name, I don't know who he is, was like, oh, I really want to, because obviously the Bolivian Revolution is going on, I want to bring over the ideology of the Cuban Revolution and transplanting in Bolivia. And he wanted a good picture of Che Guevara.
So we came for this.
So he came to Alberto Corda, who was a... Mm-hmm. I think he actually... Obviously, he became like a photographer for the government, for Fidel Castro, for like 9 years or something. And our boy Corda said, this is my best photo of Che. And it was the one he had his wall.
Good one.
Feltrinelli asked for two copies, and Corda made two 8x10 prints. Feltrinelli asked about price, and Corda said they're a gift because someone he regarded so highly had asked for them, which was the president of this think tank in Bolivia. Mm-hmm. Apparently, though, at the time, it was also risky to accept money.
Because of communism,
the government,
revolutionary ideology, everything.
Yeah, the government were on its way to removing all private businesses, obviously, as we said, and possession of foreign currency was a crime that carried a prison sentence.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a good idea. Give them away as a gift.
Bit risky. Well, you might regret saying that, because Feltrinelli began to make millions... make millions of posters.
Right.
of the photos. Selling them without mentioning Corda at all.
Joking.
So Fidel Castro actually gave Feltrinelli obviously met Fidel Castro at some point as well. I'm not sure if that happened, but he definitely got a copy of Shay's diary from the Bolivian jungle. Fidel sent it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Italian published that too, with Corda's unsigned picture on the cover as well.
That's
so as well as selling all these posters that he'd been given for free. Yeah, but they don't believe in copyright, which I can't do. He also got this unpublished book, which you can buy now, which is his final diary from the Bolivian jungle before he died, which was found in like a backpack or whatever when he was buried. And yeah, Feltrinelli took that and was like, oh, you know what would be a good picture for this picture that I'd got for free.
Corda's
picture, and that was on the cover of it, apparently. Carlo Feltrinelli's son said that Feltrinelli, what was his first name?
Giangiacomo,
yeah. Had called the photo Shay in the Sky with Jacket. Do you have any idea what that's a reference to?
Lucy in the Sky with
Diamonds. Well, you've just read that.
I've not, honestly.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, like the Beatles song, Lucy in the Sky with
you
Diamonds.
You haven't written it anyway.
Oh, right, yeah, I haven't.
Thank you, Matthew.
I did write like the Beatles
song,
though.
I'll accept that apology.
I apologise. The Beatles, ironically, were censored in Cuba at the time.
You're joking.
No,
why?
A lot of rock stars and rock music in general was censored in Cuba.
But the Beatles are mellow. They're very nice.
Yeah, but they thought differently of in the 60s, weren't they? They were like rock and roll.
Modern.
Yes, very modern. Feltrinelli died in 1972 near Milan.
I'm not sad about that one.
Apparently killed by his own explosives, I read on the website.
Oh my gosh.
Next to a high voltage power line, he was suspected of attempting to sabotage. So I don't know what he was involved in, but obviously...
He's a dodgy guy.
In Bolivia, he was involved in something to do with this fight for independence. Revolution. Don't know what he's doing in Milan, but apparently he died. I just thought it was interesting to put in.
Yeah, it's good little... bit there.
Bit of a tidbit. For decades, Korda never earned anything from the photo.
But he wouldn't have been able to. He's in Cuba.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tough one. Castro had abolished intellectual property.
Also, how do people now know it's his photo?
Well, good question.
Thank you.
Just before his death, Korda did file and prevail in some legal claims and finally had his copyright confirmed by the London High Court. He was then able to stop the use of his Shea image in Smirnoff vodka ads because he argued that he considered such commercial exploitation an insult to the legacy of Shea.
I agree with Korda there. Also, yeah. I'll just agree with him.
Yeah, Korda insisted to the press that neither he nor his hero ever actually drank alcohol. Don't know if that's true. But
from the film that we've seen, The Motorcycle Diaries, it's not true.
No, it's not true.
I've read his book. In that film.
No, he's definitely not true. Korda received $50,000, I've written here, but I don't know if it's pounds. From the settlement, which he donated to the Cuban state to buy children's medicine on the international market.
That is adorable. He's so good.
So, this photo... So his name has now been attached. Everyone knows that they... Well, maybe if you're listening, you don't know, but now you do.
That yeah, it's his photo.
He's the man who took this photo, even though Feltrinelli made a lot of money off it, and people still continue to make money off it. This photo we know today is iconic, and it's an image symbolic of and synonymous with revolution. And some people would say communism as well, obviously.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking of which, this image is everywhere. A simple Google search of it will give you millions of hits, which will try... Sorry, what was that?
I was just going to say, it's one of the women at work really likes Che Guevara, so she even has that picture on her desk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't know. So, yeah, it'll give you millions of hits, and all the hits on Google will no doubt try and sell you this image plastered onto T-shirts and mugs and posters for your university halls and wherever else. Which is obviously a huge ironic considering what Che Guevara stood for. And obviously Alberto Korda highlighted this, saying that the image is not being used in the way it should be, really.
I know, but I don't think a lot of people understand that.
Well, yeah, that's why it's just... I'll get onto a little bit more about what it's been used for. It's become one of the most reproduced photos ever, alongside others such as the Mona Lisa, which is not a photo, is it? It's a painting. But it's reproduced images ever. And Marilyn Monroe and her skirt.
Ooh!
That one.
Yeah.
On top of the grid. I think coincidentally, I'm not sure why. Maybe it's coincidentally because this relates to a previous podcast we did recently.
Oh, okay.
The student barricades of Paris in 1968 had this image plastered onto them. If you listened back a couple of weeks ago, 50th episode.
Yep.
I did a report on...
Yeah, 50 years ago.
I did a report on the Paris riots, 1968. And these revolutionaries in Paris obviously used this image as well. Madonna used it also on her cover album for American Life, apparently an album she did. And it's been used by lots of different artists in lots of different ways. Patrick Sims, who wrote a book about the man and the myth around Shea, called Chasing Shea, a motorcycle Journey in Search of the Guevara Legend, spoke to the New York Times saying, "I think the more that time goes by, the chicer and chicer Shea gets because the less he stands for anything. Because he's been used by everyone."
Yeah.
what he actually stood for has been diluted so much that now he's just seen as like it's just cool to use. This image has become but a style icon that you can adapt to fit your need. And I saw photos of an image of Shay with a marijuana joint in his mouth from Amsterdam.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at that one.
I saw one with Mickey Mouse ears on. Oh. So it's all just like this bizarre.
Yeah, he's an icon. Is like the image is an icon and he's an icon, but what he stood for is not an icon. Like a lot of people wouldn't agree with what he stood for.
Well, yeah, exactly. Back in Cuba, it still is a strange thing as well. It's not just around the world; it's also in Cuba that his image has been a bit.
I've seen it.
It's used everywhere, but it's also
they sell it a lot.
Yeah, and his card as Shay did end up on Cuba's 3-peso bill as well, which is approximately equivalent to an American dime.
That's interesting.
Which is strange again because he didn't care for money or anything.
No, but it's also interesting that the place that still probably upholds his values and his beliefs to an extent are then using his face.
Yeah.
On a money bill.
That's why I put it in. I thought it was interesting. It's still used everywhere in Cuba on the Ministry of the Interior. People take selfies with the big images of Shay around Cuba in Civic Square, which is now the Plaza of the Revolution. And even Barack Obama, when he went in 2016, posed with American and Cuban officials for a group photo with this big Shay in the background, which is obviously strange.
I'm surprised it was even there.
Yeah, but they've been repairing.
Yeah, but it's not good,
relations. But it's just a strange... It's become a strange monster now, this image of Shay. I think.
Yeah, I don't think he'd like it.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to speak for him, but...
No.
It seems very strange. But it's one of the most famous images of all time.
But maybe if he hadn't have died in the way that he did, and if he'd lived longer and done more with his life, this image wouldn't have been big. Because it's only after he died that somebody wanted images of Shay, and they published his diary and everything, because he died a hero.
Yeah.
Essentially.
To some people, yeah.
Yeah, well, to a lot of people in Central and South America.
Yeah.
So then they went looking for this image, but if he'd lived longer, somebody might not have gone looking for this image. It probably would have been a different image or a different
maybe
person.
Maybe when he's older or...
Yeah.
But that's my report. Oh, it's quite a sad story of...
It is, actually.
The image taken by Alberto Korda of Che Guevara. Do you have another report you want
to... Yes, do you want me to do it?
Begin? Yeah, so what is your famous photo?
My famous photo is known as Tank Man.
Okay.
Do you know it, don't you?
Is it in China?
Yes, it's in China.
And there's a guy stood in front of a line of tanks on a street.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Don't know
so
when it was
it's
during.
A big square. So it's we're going back to spring 1989.
Oh.
There's political turmoil, and student protests were escalating. So on June 4th, which I would argue is summer, not spring, but oh well, the Chinese government cracked down hard and killed some students who had gathered in Tiananmen Square.
Okay.
This picture is actually taken by 5 different people, but I'm going to focus mainly at the start on this man called Jeff. It's called Jeff Widener.
Do you know why they were killing student protests?
No, and I'm not sure. I didn't really look into that.
Okay.
I looked into
the photo.
There was more of a story for the photo.
Okay.
But I can research it if you want.
No, it's okay.
So other members of the press were also in China at this time. Jeff worked for the Associated Press, and he'd been sent with an unenviable task to document what was happening in this square. He thought he'd drawn the short straw, because he didn't want to put his life on the line.
Yeah, it's a bit dangerous.
Yeah, so he was dispatched the morning after. So on the 4th of June, there's a big event, the cracking down and killing students. On the morning after, they're sending these pressing. They're like, we need this documented. So they attacked pro-democracy demonstrators who were camped on the plaza. Okay. And China's not a democracy, so it's a...
Yeah.
So that's... That's the reason. Yeah,
basic.
That's the reason, and they're going to crack down on it very hard.
Okay.
At the time, security were said to have used cattle prods on journalists, forcing them to surrender any photographic equipment in order to silence freedom of the press.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's five different people who managed to get a picture of this is mad, because it was really difficult to get in.
I was going to say, would they have to smuggle it out or anything?
Yeah, so I'll get onto that a little bit. Jeff concealed his gear and gained access into Tiananmen Square with the assistance of American college student Kirk Martson. He was regarding as a guest at a nearby Beijing hotel, and he snuck him in. So he helped him get in. I don't think they'd have been able to do it on their own without help. So he had film rolls stuffed down his pants and camera equipment hidden in his jacket, and he made his way to the sixth floor room of the hotel, which was on the edge of the square.
Also, the hotel overlooks the square. I was lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was perched on the balcony of the Beijing Hotel. He had a limited roll of film, and security were on high alert. So this is a tense time, I think.
Yeah.
He composed three shots of the tank man, and the candid photography is now recognised as a symbol of dignity in the face of violent repression.
Yeah, it's like a tiny man. And
yeah,
all
there's like
tanks.
A row of tanks and a man. So I'll come on to that in a little bit.
Sorry.
So Jeff photographed bloody victims, passers-by on bicycles, and the occasional scorched bus when something caught his attention, and it was this man. A column of tanks were rolling by, and a man carrying shopping bags had just stepped out in front of them, and he was waving his arms and refusing to move.
Right.
So I've given you a brief story, and I'll go into it a little bit more.
Okay.
So he stopped in front of the tanks. The lead tank manoeuvred to pass by the van, but he repeatedly shifted his position in order to obstruct the tank's attempt to get around
him. Tanks aren't very quick, are they?
No, it's very slow as well. So they tried to go round him, but he constantly stepped into their path. And Jeff thought the man would be killed, but the tanks held their fire. It's said that the photo that Jeff got wouldn't exist without Kirk Martson, the student who helped him, because he snuck him up to his room, and then he went out and somehow got him a final roll of film because Jeff had ran out.
Right.
So if he hadn't got that final roll of film, we wouldn't have this image. Although there are others existing, but his was the one that was widely used in the press. So it was on the last roll of film, and as I said, he composed three shots. Two were blurry, and the last one was acceptable. So he literally got it on one shot, and then his was the one that was published around the world. But even if he hadn't have got the shot, somebody else would have.
Yeah.
So Stuart Franklin was another man who was there, and he was on assignment for Time magazine. He told the New York Times that shots were fired at some point, and the tanks carried on down the road towards the square, but they were blocked by a lone protester. So this was the man with the shopping bags. He wore a white shirt and black trousers, and he held two shopping bags. The tanks came to a stop, and the man gestured towards the tanks with one of the bags. They attempted to drive round him, as I've said, but he repeatedly moved. And then the lead tank, the other tanks just followed. So the lead tank tried to get round him and then stopped, and the other ones all stopped as well. And they're just in a line, essentially, down this square, and this little man stood in the way. And there was a short, like, pause where it seemed that they'd reached, like, a... impasse, that was the word that I've got, where just neither of them was doing anything. So he was blocking the way and they weren't moving. So he successfully brought the tanks to a halt, and the man then climbed onto the hull of the lead tank, and he stopped at the driver's hatch. And then it says, in video footage of the incident, he appeared to call into various ports in the tank's turret. So it seems like he's talking to those in the tank.
I didn't know any of this, but I thought he just stood there. I didn't know what happened afterwards.
So then he climbed atop the turret and seemed to then have a short conversation with a crew member at the gunner's hatch. And after this conversation, the man got down from the tank. The tank commander briefly emerged from his hatch, and then the tanks restarted their engines. They were ready to continue on, but at this point, the man then got in the way again. He was like, no. So it re-established the man-tank standoff.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's not really clear, like, the story's not clear about what happened, but apparently video footage shows two figures in blue pulling the man away and disappearing with him into a nearby crowd. And then the tanks continued on their way. Eyewitnesses are unsure who pulled him aside. Charlie Cole was there reporting for Newsweek, and he said it was the Chinese government, but Jan Wong, who was there reporting for The Globe and The Mail, thought the men who pulled him away were concerned bystanders. But this is one of them things that we'll never know, and I'll get onto it because there's quite a lot of conspiracies about who he was.
Yeah, no, I thought no one knew who he was.
No, they don't, but there are conspiracies. So the man was whisked away. But this was not before Jeff managed to capture his image and he immortalised the singular act of resistance.
Good sentence.
I know. The tank man was never identified, and this is unlike Napalm Girl or Afghan Girl, and that refers to two other famous pictures. Do you know them too?
Yeah, I was thinking we might do them next week. I had Tank Man, Afghan Girl and Vietnam War.
And Napalm which Girls. Is Napalm. Yeah. So yeah. Them two girls were both known, but Tank Man was never. Mm. We don't know his identity. There's no reliable information, even though it's been over 40 years now. Is that it?
1989? No.
Oh, no.
Well, my sister was born in 1989, so...
Almost 30 years.
Almost 30 years.
Sorry. Sorry, Emma. And the story, also the story of what happened to the tank crew is not known, which is a bit unusual as well. So it just seems like.
But there's a lot of suppression of information, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. So somewhere, someone will know, but the rest of us won't.
Yeah.
We just have to accept that.
I accept it.
Good.
But I like to conspire. Come up with conspiracy theories.
Thank you. So the tank man. He protested on the day against these acts of the government. Other eyewitnesses have stated that he wasn't the only person to protest. And Xiao Jiang was a student leader, and they said that they witnessed a lot of people standing up and blocking the tanks. But Tank Man's unique in the fact that he was the only one photographed and videoed on the day.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's another thing that we'll probably never know properly. It's a bit sad that we'll never know. It seems unusual that there's things that... Obviously, there's things that we'll never know, but with today's technology, it just seems bizarre.
Yeah, like, things are missed. There's not always someone there for photographing it. That's why photographs are...
No, I know, but big. I mean, like, we don't know the true story. Nobody's ever going to be able to research and find out the true story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
We know that about a lot of things, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The further we get away from it as well, the less likely we are to know the true story of it.
Yeah, I think we're getting a bit far away from this one. So as I've said, little's known about the man's identity or the tank member's identity or even the commander of the lead tank, so we don't know who that was.
Right.
Shortly after the incident, the British tabloid, the Sunday Express, named him as Wang Weilin, a 19-year-old student who was later charged with political hooliganism and attempting to subvert members of the People's Liberation Army. But this claim's been rejected by the Internal Communist Party of China documents. And they reported that they could not find the man. And according to the Hong Kong-based Information Centre for Human Rights, one party member was quoted as saying, "We can't find him. We got his name from journalists. We've checked through computers but can't find him among the dead or among those in prison." But how much do we believe
exactly,
that? That's
yeah.
Could be a lie. But numerous theories have sprung up about his identity and his current whereabouts. There's several conflicting stories about what happened after the demonstration. In a speech to the President's Club in 1999, Bruce Hershenson, who was former Deputy Special Assistant to President Richard Nixon, that was a tough sentence, he reported that the gentleman tank man, was executed 14 days later.
Mm.
But other sources say he was executed by a firing squad a few months after the event.
Yeah, I did think that...
Did he die?
Did he die?
Yeah.
What do you think? I think most likely.
I think highly likely.
If a lot of people were being... You know, you mentioned students were being killed.
I think
this sort of act of... independence. What am I trying to say? This sort of act of
defiance.
Thanks. Would not be able to stand.
I don't know.
They would not allow him.
No,
to
definitely
do this.
Not. It's embarrassing.
They would not allow him to get away with this.
It's really
but
embarrassing.
But it's strange then that we don't know that he definitely died.
I know, but I think it's.
Or maybe they have been like, we don't want this. We don't want his name getting out. We don't want him to become some sort of martyr or hero.
I think that's what it is, you know. I also think it was a bit of an embarrassing situation, so they just cover it all up.
Yeah.
So, that's some sources think that he was killed either 14 days later or a few months later. But Jan Wong, who I've mentioned before, she wrote in a book, Red China Blues, My Long March from Mao to Now. That's her book. She wrote that she believes that the government press, through interactions with them, but they have no idea who it was or where they are now. And she thinks that this tank man's still alive somewhere in China.
All right.
Another theory is that he escaped to Taiwan and remains employed there as an archaeologist in the National Palace Museum, which
that's
is
quite
very
specific.
Yeah. I was thinking that as I got it, but I couldn't find anything else on that one, so I'm not sure.
That's very specific.
This was first reported by the Yonhap News Agency in South Korea.
When was that?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So that one's a specific one that I'm not sure of. So as I said, others also captured the scene, but Jeff's image was transmitted over the Associated Press wire. And it appeared on front pages all over the world. As I said, he wasn't identified, but the anonymity makes the photograph all more universal and a symbol of resistance to unjust regimes everywhere.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think there's pros and cons about him becoming a hero, like if he put a face to a name, but I think he's a hero without putting a face to a name anyway.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because our two heroic images are one person who didn't want to become a hero. He wouldn't want his image spread. But
this one, I think, he might not have wanted his image spread, but it helps that his image is spread.
And he is not known.
Yeah.
Whereas he is known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's like opposites.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at.
I know you're struggling today, aren't you?
I don't know what's happened to my words today.
Yeah. So, there were five photographs who managed to capture the event on film. So, there were five that exist that were not later confiscated by the Chinese government.
Okay.
So, I think a lot were confiscated, but there's five that exist. So, there were four until 2009, when on the 4th of June, which is 20 years after the event, someone released another image that they had. And this was the scene taken from ground level. So I don't know if it's before been seen widely, unless you were there at ground level.
So were all the other ones taken from, like, balconies? And...
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
The widest coverage of the event, it's been argued if it's Jeff or if it was Stuart Franklin, who I mentioned before. So I've read a lot of sources which say it was Jeff, but this source said it was Stuart Franklin, so I think they both got an image. I think Stuart Franklin got a wider image.
Right.
So he captured more in the image, and I think he looks a bit smaller, whereas Jeff was focused on Tank Man.
Right.
So Stuart Franklin's the image appeared in Time and Life magazine, which are big magazines, and he was on the same balcony as Charlie Cole. Stuart Franklin smuggled his roll of film out of the country, concealed in a box of tea, and it was smuggled out by a French student. So it's mad that you have to smuggle out this image that way. But that one's...
Maybe I heard that the other day, actually. I think I was just going to say something about it being something being smuggled out in a box of tea. So I definitely read this, like, the other week.
Yeah, so that was Stuart Franklin's. The most used photograph of the event was by Jeff. He was concerned that his shots were no good, but his image has appeared on the front page of all European papers at the
just
time.
Just all of them?
Yeah.
Wow.
All. So he's the one that I mentioned before. He was also nominated for the Pulitzer Prize for the image, but he didn't win.
Oh.
But his photograph has been widely known as one of the most iconic photographs in history.
Yeah.
And it's in the top 100 time.
Oh, is it?
Photos, yeah.
What is number one on that, do you remember?
I don't know, but I think it might be Afghan Girl.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I'm not sure. Charlie Cole was working for Newsweek, and he was on the same balcony as Stuart Franklin. He hid his roll of film containing Tankman in a Beijing hotel toilet. So it seems like they were all in the same hotel.
Right.
So he hid it in the toilet.
But then how did he get it out?
So he sacrificed an unused roll of film and undeveloped images of wounded protesters after the PSB raided his room. So they destroyed that film. And then they think they've taken all of his film.
But he's got this.
And he's hidden the one of Tankman.
In a toilet.
In the toilet. Which is interesting that he chose Tankman to save rather than the other images.
I think instinctively, you know, that was quite a unique image and quite an
Yeah, and I guess that's the problem with film at the time. They can't see instantly that that's the best picture to have. Because he was on the same balcony as Stuart Franklin, and he couldn't be like, I've got it. You save your ones of the protesters, and I've got this one. He couldn't be like, because you can't guarantee that, can you?
No, but I mean, he knows that what he's seeing, that is like the most unique and important, this scene that's happening, whether it's a good picture or not, he knows that what he's shot of that.
So they destroyed the other two rolls of film.
Mm.
The PSB, which I think I've mentioned before, I can't quite remember who it is, but it's the government.
People's something.
Yeah.
Bureau. The People's Something Bureau.
No, it's not. It's the I can't find it. It's the Chinese government, and the PSB is the police.
Public Service Broadcasting.
No, no,
the band.
It's the Chinese government. So their police is the PSB, and they destroyed the two rolls of film that he sacrificed, which was about wounded
Public
protesters.
Public Security Bureau.
Okay. Yeah. Public Security Bureau. So they destroyed the two rolls of film. So the one about the other wounded protesters and one blank roll of film. So he then had to sign a confession to photography during martial law. So he signed a confession to say that he'd taken photography of this thing, and it was an imprisonable offence. But he just signed the confession. I don't think he went to prison.
I'm confused by this, but so.
So they destroyed the rolls of film, and then they forced him to sign a confession.
Saying,
which said
you've taken photos of this.
Yeah.
I thought they knew he was there to do that, though.
They snuck in the photos. They were there as press, but they tried to remove all cameras and filming material. So that they wouldn't have any
images. So they signed a confession saying, I have taken these images, but they're all deleted. Or
they destroyed them, so signed a confession. But if he hadn't sacrificed the images, it would have been an imprisonable offence.
Yeah.
So he's now, in their eyes, a criminal anyway.
Mm.
He managed to retrieve the roll, and he sent it to Newsweek. And he was awarded the 1990 World Press Photo of the Year. And the picture was featured in Life's 100 Photographs That Changed the World in 2003.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they've both, it's interesting that both photographers have, I don't know about the other two, but those two have both gained a lot of acclaim for this photo.
Yeah, but to me it would just seem like one photo, but there must be a few photos
going
around.
Slightly different angles.
And then the one that was released on the 4th of June 2009, it was in connection with the 20th anniversary of the protest.
Do you think that they... Why didn't they release it at the time? Do you have any?
I think they would be very afraid of releasing it at the time.
But were they still in China then? Or were they... Because I'm assuming these other two went home, and that's why they were just able to release them.
I don't know.
Or do you think they put it in a box?
Well, it was released by Terrell Jones, and he was also an Associated Press reporter. Mm. So Associated Press used Jeff's photo.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he just thought, mine's not being used.
Or do you think he just hid it away? Well, I just took him and was like, oh, these aren't being used. Put them away for a while. And then he found them like 17 years later. He's like, I can't release on the 17th anniversary. I need to wait a couple of years.
Yeah, wait till the 20th. Well, I don't think he was ever intending to release it. And then it was just that they were doing this 20th event. And he was like, oh, go on then.
I've got another one. We've actually got another one. Yeah.
So he had photos of Tankman from the ground, which was a different angle.
I think that's an interesting angle.
He said that he weren't aware of what he'd captured until a month later when printing his photos.
Right, okay.
So there's the four of them. I'm not sure who the fifth one is.
Who's the other one?
So I've mentioned Charlie Cole. Jeff
Wagner.
Oh, I didn't
know Charlie Cole. Okay. Yeah.
Charlie Cole's the one who hid it in the toilet.
Right.
Stuart Franklin and Terrell Jones.
I thought he
Jones.
Was the one who hid it in the toilet.
Stuart Franklin's the one in the roll of tea. Right. Not the roll of tea. Hid the roll of film in the tea.
And the other guy hid it in... Do we not know?
Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he just smuggled it out with the student, maybe. Right, I don't know. I don't know how he got that out.
Right.
So Jeff said that of the tank man, he assumed that he thought he was going to die because he stood in front of some tanks. But he doesn't care because for whatever reason, either he's lost a loved one or he's just had it with the government or whatever it is, his statement is more important than his own life.
When you say he doesn't care, he means the guy who's in front of the tank doesn't care. Yeah.
Jeff also said that he was just relieved that he didn't mess up. And it's known as one of the greatest photographs of all time. And it's in the top 100 time, most influential photographs of all time.
Wow.
So that's the story of capturing the tank man.
I had no idea that there were more than one photo.
No, I didn't either.
That is strange.
Yeah, because when I first read it, I heard about Stuart Franklin's photo.
Right.
And then I did loads more research and everyone was talking about Jeff. So it's a tough one.
Thank you for that report.
Thanks for your report.
Two good reports today. should we do another one next week then?
With
a couple more famous mm-hmm. photos.
Yeah.
A couple more, maybe. Well, we'll have a chat and we'll see what we got.
Sounds good.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can leave us a review on iTunes, on Podbean, on whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. Obviously, you know the name of our podcast. It's Idiots Talk History. You can tell a friend. That'd be really nice. And we've got a whole over a year now of podcasts for you to listen to. We mm-hmm. released our first one on the 23rd of August, maybe. Our first three episodes.
Something like that.
So over a year now. So go back and listen to them. We've got lots of different reports and all sorts of different things. As I mentioned, we've mentioned a couple in today's episode. Mm-hmm. Paris riots and Fidel Castro. You can follow us on Twitter at Idiot History Pod or just search Idiots Talk History. You'll find us there. The same at Idiots Talk History on Instagram and Facebook, which we'll be updating. We'll probably put some photos on. We'll obviously photos of Tankman and of Shay. And we got an email. If you have any ideas, you can send us to them via mm-hmm. any of our social media or on the email at idiothistorypod@gmail.com. Yeah. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Just
have a good week.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy your week. And we will speak to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.